Imagine opening your inbox to this cold corporate email from a company that you've spent the last 5 years of your life helping to build.
Right. That is a terrifying thought.
And you aren't being let go because the company is struggling. I mean, they are actually posting record profits.
Yeah, record profits.
You're being let go because the AI tools that you literally just spent the last 6 months beta testing have, well, suddenly become good enough to just do your job autonomously.
Which is just wild to even think about.
Right. And on May 10th, 2026, that wasn't like a pitch for some dystopian sci-fi movie. That was the actual brutal reality buried inside a quarterly earnings report.
It really was.
So welcome to the deep dive. Today we're unpacking a massive stack of news from Tekken Night, May 2026.
That's right.
And we are really looking at a single day that just completely rewired the technological landscape.
Yeah.
We're going to use these sources to answer one big overarching question for you, which is, who is actually going to control the future of technology?
Honestly, it is the defining question of our time. I mean, when you look at the events of May 2026, you're really watching this high-stakes tug-of-war unfold in real time.
Yeah, totally.
On one end of the rope, you have these big tech companies, and they're accelerating automation at a pace that is, frankly, it's difficult to even comprehend.
Oh, for sure.
And then on the other end, you have individuals, national governments, independent developers, and they're aggressively pulling back. They're trying to build systems that protect human autonomy and digital sovereignty.
Well, let's start with that acceleration, because the Cloudflare earnings report is just a perfect example of how insanely fast this is moving.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, Cloudflare is one of the foundational pillars of the internet. They handle security, content delivery for like a massive chunk of the web.
They're everywhere.
Right. And on May 7th, they dropped their Q1 2026 financials, and the numbers were just staggering. We're talking $10.3 billion in revenue.
Wow.
Yeah. And 38% year-over-year growth. Like, they are absolutely swimming in cash.
They really are.
And then, in that exact same breath, they announced they were laying off 1,100 workers.
Yeah.
That is 20% of their entire workforce.
Historically, a company posting record profits while simultaneously cutting, a fifth of its staff, they would hide behind this carefully sanitized corporate jargon.
Oh, yeah, like strategic restructuring or something.
Exactly. Or finding macroeconomic synergies, right? But Matthew Prince, the CEO of Cloudflare, he didn't do that at all.
No, he did not.
He explicitly blamed the layoffs on the implementation of agentic AI tools. He stated outright that these tools have made entire categories of human labor obsolete.
Which is just chilling.
Specifically, things like customer support, data analysis, QA testing, and, content writing.
See, the phrase agentic AI is doing like a lot of heavy lifting there, because I think a lot of people still hear AI and they picture a chatbot, right? Where you type in a prompt and it spits back a paragraph of text.
Yeah, like a conversational back and forth.
Right, but what Cloudflare is using is fundamentally different than that, right?
Oh, it's utterly different. I mean, a conversational AI requires constant human prompting and handholding, really. But agentic AI implies agency.
Oh.
It acts as its own project manager. So let's look at QA testing, for example.
Sure.
Previously, a human tester would have to, write a testing script, run it against the software, identify a bug, write a whole report on the bug.
Then send it to a developer to fix.
Exactly. But an agentic AI tool is just given a high-level goal, like, ensure this new software module is stable.
And it just figures the rest out.
Yes. The AI independently writes the test, runs it, identifies the bug, rewrites the code to fix the bug.
Wait, it rewrites the actual code itself?
It does. And then it verifies the fix and logs the entire process without a human ever even clicking a mouse. It takes complex goals and just breaks them into autonomous subtasks.
Wow. So it's not just like faster, it's functionally replacing the workflow of an entire team. And, reading the reactions from the laid off employees in these sources, it's sobering. It's just this profound sense of whiplash for them.
Understandably so.
Now, Cloudflare is offering a generous severance. I mean, full salary and health insurance straight through the end of 2026.
Which is significant.
It is, but a severance package doesn't solve the long-term problem for you or me or anyone else. If an AI can do all of this independently, what happens to the knowledge economy?
Well, the McKinsey data that's cited in our research actually puts a hard number on that exact anxiety.
Okay, what are the numbers?
They project that 375 million jobs globally will be eliminated by 2030.
375 million.
Yes, strictly due to AI integration. Now, they also project the creation of 133 million new jobs.
Okay, in fields that don't currently exist, I assume.
Right, but that gap, you know, between the jobs lost and the jobs created, that represents a massive, intensely painful societal transition.
Oh, definitely.
And the survival strategy outlined in the data isn't to, like, try and compete with the AI on efficiency or speed.
Because you'll just lose.
You will absolutely lose that fight.
Yeah.
The strategy is to combine human creativity with AI output. So the premium is now on things like strategic thinking, deep emotional intelligence, and complex, nuanced problem solving.
Basically, the things the machine cannot yet simulate.
Exactly.
But the machines are getting a lot closer to simulating us in the physical world, too. Because while Cloudflare is automating digital labor, Meta just made this, like, $5 trillion pivot to automate physical labor.
Yeah, that was huge news.
Right. On May 1st, Meta acquired a startup called Assured Robot Intelligence, or ARI, and they're quietly just, you know, walking away from that $36 billion metaverse project that never really found its footing.
Which is probably a smart move.
Right, and now they are sprinting toward the humanoid robot market.
Well, the humanoid robot market is projected to hit $5 trillion by 2030.
$5 trillion?
Yeah, that is an economic gravitational pull that no tech giant can just ignore. I mean, Tesla already has over $5 billion invested in their Optimus prototype alone. And Boston Dynamics is targeting mass production for their Atlas robot by 2027. So Meta realizes that if they sit this out, they miss the next major hardware revolution entirely.
But what really fascinates me here is that Meta isn't actually trying to build the physical robot. Like, they don't want to bend the metal or engineer the hydraulics,
okay,
right?
Not at all.
They acquired ARI because ARI specializes in building AI models that actually adapt to human behaviors in dynamic, messy physical environments.
Yes.
So Meta essentially wants to be the Android operating system for robots.
That's a perfect analogy.
They want Boston Dynamics or Tesla to build the physical shell, but they want the brain running the show to be pure Meta.
Exactly.
And they are throwing some serious weight behind this. ARI's founders are literally moving into Meta's superintelligence labs alongside Turing Award winner Jan LeCun. And they're supposedly hiring like 150 more researchers.
Because the strategy is ubiquitous control. I mean, look at how Google dominates mobile.
Right.
Google doesn't manufacture every single smartphone on Earth. They just provide the Android operating system that the vast majority of them run on.
Yeah, that's true.
So Meta is positioning itself to be the unavoidable cognitive layer of physical automation. And it is a brilliant, highly lucrative play.
Wall Street certainly thought so. I mean, Meta's stock jumped 8% on the news.
Yeah.
And analysts are projecting a $2 trillion valuation by 2028 if they can actually execute this OS strategy.
But, you know, Wall Street might be optimistic, but if you take a step back, this raises a massive security concern.
Oh, absolutely. Because we are talking about Meta here.
Right.
This is a company with a very long, very complicated history regarding the data privacy of what? Billions of Facebook and Instagram users?
Exactly. And to build an AI that accurately simulates and anticipates human behavior in the physical world, you need an absolute ocean of behavioral data.
Yeah. And so the question is it really safe for a single corporate entity whose primary historical asset is basically human surveillance data to build the brains of the machines operating in our homes and workplaces?
It's the ultimate privacy paradox. Because to make a humanoid robot safe so it doesn't, you know, accidentally step on your dog or drop a hot cup of coffee when someone unexpectedly walks into a room.
Right. It needs to know what we're going to do.
Exactly. The AI must perfectly map and anticipate unpredictable human behavior. But feeding the world's largest social media behavioral data set into physical machines, that creates a surveillance network unlike anything we have ever seen.
Because the physical world really is the final frontier for data collection.
It is.
And while individuals, you know, are feeling the pressure of losing their jobs or their privacy to these automated systems, we're seeing entire nations realize they might actually lose their digital sovereignty.
Yes, which takes us over to Europe.
Right. On May 9th, Arjan Prissé went on this Dutch podcast, Die Technologie, and just dropped a bombshell. And for context, for anyone listening, Brucey is a legend in the tech world. He co-founded Guerrilla Games. He was the tech director at Epic Games.
He knows what he's talking about.
He does. And he announced the creation of a fully European game engine called the Immense Engine.
This is not just some indie project. This is a highly funded, state-backed strategic initiative.
Yeah.
The Dutch government is directly funding it with 50 million euros. And the European Union is backing it through their Horizon program, which is it's the EU's massive flagship funding initiative for research and innovation.
And the stated goal of the immense engine is basically to break Europe's dependence on American engines like Unreal and Unity and Chinese engines like Cocos.
Right. And, you know, before we dig into the specific geopolitical fears driving this, we should just make it very clear to you, the listener, that we aren't taking sides or endorsing any of these political viewpoints.
Absolutely not, no.
We are simply reporting the concerns and the ideas exactly as they are laid out in our source material.
Yeah, we're just the messengers here. So the sources outline a few specific anxieties driving Europe's move. First is the threat of trade wars.
Right.
Because if geopolitical tensions escalate, access to foundational tools like Unreal Engine could essentially be weaponized or restricted.
Yeah.
And second, there's a major privacy issue. American engines are subject to the Cloud Act.
Right. So the Cloud Act is a piece of U.S. legislation that essentially allows federal law enforcement to compel U.S.-based tech companies to hand over requested data.
No matter where the servers are, right?
Exactly. Regardless of whether those servers are physically located in the U.S. or over in Europe.
Wow.
So for European governments, relying on software governed by that law is just increasingly viewed as an unacceptable vulnerability.
And then conversely, the sources note that using Chinese engines for sensitive applications like smart city infrastructure or defense simulations is viewed as a severe national security risk.
Yeah. So the immense engine is really being pitched as the solution to all of that.
Right.
It is 100% GDPR compliant, meaning it strictly adheres to Europe's stringent data protection laws, and it is explicitly cleared for NATO military simulations.
Which is huge.
It is. It has built-in advanced AI, and the alpha version is dropping in early 2027.
But wait, let's just look at Epic Games for a second. Because they have spent decades and poured billions of dollars into making Unreal Engine 5 the bedrock of the digital world.
To dominate the space.
They really do. It doesn't just run video games. It runs the digital sets for movies like The Mandalorian. It runs architectural pre-visualizations, automotive design.
Everything.
Everything. So can a 50 million euro government project actually put a dent in that entrenched ecosystem? Or is this just like a highly expensive NATO defense contract disguised as a consumer game engine?
It's a great question. And honestly, it is a very steep uphill battle to capture the consumer gaming market from Epic or Unity.
Right, because developers already know those tools.
Exactly. Developers are trained on them. Entire studios are built around those pipelines. However, the mechanics of control here don't rely purely on having the best lighting engine or the best physics simulation.
Okay, so what do they rely on?
Europe is utilizing legislation to artificially carve out a market. So if the EU mandates that specific medical, industrial, or government simulations must use homegrown GDPR-compliant technology, then the immense engine instantly gains this captive multi-billion-dollar enterprise market.
That makes total sense.
Right. The video game application is likely secondary to securing the underlying infrastructure of Europe's digital economy.
So it's basically using state power to build a digital border.
Yes.
But, you know, you don't have to be a nation state passing sweeping legislation to protect your users from predatory forces. Because Valve, the company behind the massive PC gaming platform Steam, is applying that exact same philosophy of digital borders to their own storefront.
Yeah, this was a really clever move.
They just declared an all-out war on hardware scalpers with the announcement of the new Steam controller.
And look, hardware scalping has decimated the consumer electronics industry for the better part of a decade.
Oh, it's the worst.
Whether it's concert tickets, limited edition sneakers, gaming consoles, automated bot networks just buy up all the inventory in milliseconds.
Creating that artificial scarcity.
Right, and forcing actual consumers to pay these exorbitant markups on the secondary market.
And tech companies have spent millions, right, trying to build complex anti-bot software and CAPTCHAs and all these digital hurdles.
And the hackers always find the way around them.
Exactly. But Valve essentially bypassed the whole software arms race entirely with some incredibly elegant logic.
Yeah, they really did.
They priced the new Steam controller at $79.99, but to buy it, you have to enter a reservation queue. And to even get in that queue, your Steam account must have been created before April 27, 2026.
Which is key.
Right. And you must have a verified prior purchase history on the platform. And then, when your turn in the queue finally comes up, you only have 72 hours to actually complete the payment.
It is an absolute masterclass in economic friction.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how sophisticated a scalper's bot network is, a bot cannot retroactively travel back in time to create thousands of accounts before that April cutoff date.
No, I can't.
Furthermore, requiring a legitimate prior purchase history means a scalper would have had to spend real money on thousands of accounts months ago just to even be eligible today.
And that 72-hour payment window is basically the kill shot?
Precisely. Because the economic model of a scalper relies on acquiring the asset and flipping it quickly, or returning it if it doesn't sell.
Right.
So by forcing them to front the cash within 72 hours, or lose the reservation entirely, Valve breaks their liquidity.
Yeah.
Even if a scalper managed to sneak a few legitimate accounts through the filter, they just cannot hoard the inventory indefinitely.
And the reaction from the community has just been overwhelming. Gamers are thrilled to see a company actually leverage its own data to protect the buyer rather than exploit them.
Yeah, it builds so much trust.
It really shows that when a platform actively defends its community, the goodwill it generates is immense. And that craving for community, you know, for shared experiences, that seems to be driving the most interesting software developments right now, too.
There is definitely a clear pattern emerging here. As our professional environments become increasingly isolated through automation, like we saw with Cloudflare, our leisure activities are aggressively pivoting toward collaboration.
Yeah, because summer 2026 is bringing us Aliens, Fireteam Elite 2. And they are upgrading from a 3-player co-op to a 4-player co-op. They're building it on Unreal Engine 5 and setting it in this much darker abandoned space station campaign.
Sounds awesome.
It really does. And it's capitalizing on this massive boom in the co-op gaming market that we've seen proven by runaway hits like, you know, Helldivers 2 and Deep Rock Galactic.
Right.
And there's a beautiful irony here, if you really think about it, because we started this deep dive talking about agentic AI making human teams completely obsolete. Yet, when we clock out of work, we don't want to play with AI bots. We want hewing teammates. We want to coordinate and communicate and survive the xenomorphs together. We have this undeniable societal craving for connection.
Well, humans are fundamentally social creatures.
Right.
If the modern workplace is stripping away the collaborative human element in favor of autonomous efficiency, people will naturally seek out complex, cooperative problem solving in digital spaces.
That makes total sense.
And developers who recognize and respect that psychological need are finding massive success right now.
And the developers who are rewarding that community loyalty are playing a totally different game than the rest of the industry. I mean, look at Capcom.
Oh, yeah.
On May 8th, they dropped version 1.3 of Resident Evil Requiem. And tucked inside that update was a completely free, entirely new mode called Leon Must Die Forever.
And it is so important to emphasize that this is not like a minor cosmetic patch or some small side mission.
No, not at all.
This is an incredibly robust, standalone piece of content.
It's a full roguelike mode. And for anyone unfamiliar, a roguelike mode essentially means you start from scratch every single time you play. If you die, you lose your progress.
It's brutal.
Very. The levels are randomized, the weapon drops are randomized, and you just have to adapt on the fly. And Capcom built 20 distinct randomized stages for this mode alone.
Wow.
It features a ticking clock, special abilities, and a brand new final boss named Victor Gideon that you actually only unlock after beating the main campaign.
So it's huge.
It is designed to be infinitely replayable. But here's what I just don't understand.
Okay.
We are talking about an industry where publishers routinely charge players real money for, like, a different colored shirt for their character.
Oh, absolutely. Microtransactions everywhere.
Right. And it takes immense development resources to build a 20-stage roguelike mode with a new boss. So why would Capcom give this away for free when they could effortlessly charge $15 or $20 for it as premium DLC?
It really comes down to a highly sophisticated understanding of long-term business psychology.
Okay, how so?
Well, the conventional wisdom in tech and gaming right now is hyper-monetization, right? Extracting maximum revenue from every single asset produced.
Right.
But Capcom is playing a much longer game. In an era where consumers feel constantly nickel and dimed, where, you know, every digital interaction feels like a transaction.
Which is exhausting.
Extremely. Dropping a highly polished, deeply replayable mode completely for free generates an almost fanatical level of brand loyalty.
Yeah, the community reaction in the sources sums it up perfectly. One player wrote, "In a world where everything is DLC, Capcom gave us complete and engaging content for free." That kind of sentiment is incredibly rare right now.
And it is incredibly valuable. But giving players a reason to keep playing Resident Evil Requiem months after its initial release, Capcom extends the game's cultural relevance.
Right, people don't just move on to the next thing.
Exactly. It keeps players talking about it, streaming it, and sharing it. Those players become active evangelists for the brand. And that organic goodwill is ultimately worth far more to Capcom's bottom line than the quick cash grab of a paid DLC. Because it virtually guarantees that those millions of players will be there on day one, wallets open, for whatever Capcom releases next.
Wow. So where does this leave you? Let's just bring all these threads together. May 10th, 2026 proved that the technological landscape is an absolute battlefield for control.
It really is.
On one side, we are witnessing the awe-inspiring and frankly intimidating speed of automation. Cloudflare proved that agentic AI is already sophisticated enough to independently execute complex workflows and basically replace a massive chunk of highly paid knowledge workers.
Right.
And Meta is actively trying to own the physical actions of the future by building the universal brain for humanoid robots.
But the crucial takeaway from these sources is that human agency is actively fighting back.
Yes.
Europe isn't just accepting reliance on foreign engines. They are funding the immense engine to literally code their own digital borders.
Yeah.
Valve isn't accepting that scalper bots are an inevitable part of e-commerce. They are using elegant economic friction to protect their real customers.
Exactly.
And game developers are leaning heavily into free, collaborative community content because they recognize that human connection is the only thing that actually sustains their industry long term.
We are actively shaping the rules of engagement, not just passively accepting them. But there is a lingering thought that I really want to leave you with, sort of combining the two biggest forces we discussed today.
Oh, this is the big one.
Yeah. We talked about Cloudflare proving that agentic AI can independently manage tasks well enough to replace 20% of a digital workforce. And we talked about Meta building a universal operating system for the physical shells of humanoid robots.
Right.
What happens when those two specific realities merge?
It's a terrifying question.
If the independent problem-solving AI mind that Cloudflare is using gets downloaded into the physical robotic shells that Meta is building the operating system for, will the next wave of layoffs be physical, manual labor? We're talking about plumbers, electricians, construction workers, and logistics personnel suddenly competing against humanoid robots running on a free, open-source Meta OS that can independently manage their own workflows. How are we going to redefine the very concept of human work when both our cognitive intelligence and our physical labor can be downloaded from the cloud and executed autonomously? That is the tectonic shift we are currently standing on. We'll let you mull that over. Until next time.